happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Hey, gang. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal Podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the founder and editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that's John Rauhouse playing in the background. This episode, like so many others, is brought to you by our friends over at Mono Cases, monocreators.com, and Retrofret Vintage Guitars, retrofret.com. Every week on this podcast, for nearly 300 episodes now, I've tried to introduce you to somebody interesting from our little community of guitar lovers. Today is absolutely no exception. Craig Ventresco has been on my radar, been a fan for 25 years now. He was the guy who played ragtime guitar on the soundtrack for the Crumb documentary that Terry Zwigoff put out. He also contributed a track to the Ghost World soundtrack that Terry did, but mostly he's led this quiet existence under the radar, performing at local clubs in San Francisco, and really having no digital presence at all. You will find exactly one track of his right now on Spotify if you search. That's the track from that Ghost World soundtrack. He's led an interesting life, and Craig is one of the greatest guitarists that I know. He plays ragtime guitar like nobody else. His partner, Meredith Axelrod, is also an incredible guitarist and vocalist. And as this pandemic hit, I'm sure, like me, you saw thousands of great musicians do the occasional live stream, turn the Instagram live on, do off-the-cuff performances once a week, maybe once a month. Well, Craig went from having pretty much no digital footprint to having one of the most interesting ones I've seen in the last few months. He and Meredith perform every single night at 8 p.m. Pacific time, like clockwork, and broadcast on Facebook via Meredith's page. These are performances that are thoroughly captivating, feature incredible music that you're not going to find anywhere else. And he does it for a growing audience of people. He is making lemonade out of this COVID lemon that we've all been served. And it's been really a magical thing. I'll go on there and follow them and see numerous musicians that I also respect, including former Fretboard Journal subjects, watching alongside me. It's been a really magical thing. I encourage everybody to go to Meredith Axelrod's Facebook page, follow it, 8 p.m. Pacific time. It's easy to remember every single night. They are up to something like 110 performances. So this is one of the most interesting stories that has developed since COVID hit in our little community. I wanted to get Craig on the show. I wanted to hear his story. I've been following him forever, but I learned a whole lot about him and his life, and I hope you enjoy this. As always, keep the feedback coming. If there are people you would like to see on this show, let me know. Keep all the great Apple podcast reviews coming and keep sharing this with your friends. As you hopefully know, the Fretboard Journal now has three podcasts in its family, and I think we have one more coming later this summer. But we've got this one. We've got the Luthier on Luthier podcast hosted by guitar maker Michael Bashkin. And we also have the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast with Northern California amp tech legend Skip Simmons that I co-host. All three of those have provided endlessly fun entertainment during this lockdown for me, and I hope you will check them all out. Even if you don't think they're in your wheelhouse, you might be pleasantly surprised. We try to produce these so that they can hit as wide a group of guitar fanatics as humanly possible. All right, that's all I've got to let everybody know this time around. I'll keep this short. Fretboard Journal 46, mailing later this month. Subscribe if you haven't yet. And again, this podcast is brought to you by our friends at Retrofret Vintage Guitars, who happen to still have that amazing Buzzato Gypsy Jazz guitar I mentioned a couple weeks back. Go check that out on their new arrivals page. and mono cases. Go to monocreators.com to see their entire lineup of backpacks and gig bags and studio monitor stands. They're doing amazing work. Here is my chat with San Francisco's Craig Ventresco. I hope you love it. I'll include a link to Meredith's Facebook page so you guys can tune in and support him however you can, and keep the feedback coming. Craig, let's get into it. I've known you, what? I mean, we've talked since the Crumb soundtrack, I think. So that was, what, 25 years ago?
Years. Crazy, huh? Time flies.
Yeah, I mean, you've always been one of my absolute favorite guitarists. You've been so singular. Your style, you know, you're doing something that very few people are doing, this sort of like ragtime guitar. And I, more than any other musician I know, you know, when this COVID stuff hit, everybody was flocking to live stream stuff and doing Instagram Live and everything. But more than any other musician I know, I feel like perhaps your performance career has really been transformed by this. And I don't want to say in a positive way, but maybe flatline, or maybe better. I don't know. What tell for folks who don't know, every day at 8 p.m. for how many days now you've been performing live?
I can actually give you a pretty good answer to that question, because we just came up on playing 100 times. We took one night off to show solidarity for Black Lives Matter. But Sure. Other than that, we played every night. I guess this is going to be the 105th night or something like that. But of course, none of us expected to be sheltered in place for so long. I think when this all started, they were talking about 2 weeks or something. And then Meredith told me, she's a lot smarter than I am about this stuff. She said, they're just telling us 2 weeks to get us used to the idea of being sheltered in place. And she was right. It's just, but I'm sorry. About 105 times now, I think.
And before all this, I mean, every guitarist I respect knows about you, but you're kind of an underground legend in acoustic guitar circles. I talked to Matt Munisteri about you for hours, but you know, I don't know that you're a household name. Obviously, that Crumb soundtrack opened up a lot of doors to you. But before this, in January and February and before, how many times were you playing? I know you played one cafe in San Francisco a lot. How often were you playing out?
I think I was playing gigs about 6 nights a week, and they were primarily gigs with this band Gaucho that I played guitar in. We were playing, and hopefully some of those gigs will come back someday. Sure. But it's like a gypsy jazz band, and that was primarily what I was doing. Gigging with Meredith, that was happening about once a week. Unfortunately, sometimes it was less than once a week. It's really hard to get gigs in San Francisco playing ragtime guitar. I mean, that's something you can be very passionate about and never expect to make a living doing. You know, I'm completely clueless about how to make a living playing ragtime guitar, honestly. But I love to play guitar. You know, I'd go nuts if I didn't. And I like to play all kinds of stuff. So I was fortunate to join this band Gaucho, and I play lots of gigs with them. We were playing twice a week in North Beach and once a week in the Mission, and then we had all kinds of other stuff. We had casuals, and we were doing all right, you know. So the answer is I was playing a fair amount. I felt very grateful to be playing so much.
And Meredith, who you've mentioned a couple times, is Meredith Axelrod, who has somehow, I don't know how old she is or you are, but she has a voice that is like straight from a 78 record. I don't know. That probably took years of training, but she's also an exceptional guitarist and your partner.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. So has this, I know you have a tip jar, and I don't need to know all your particular details, but have you been able to kind of sustain yourself through all these live performances? Because I don't know too many people who have.
Yeah, well, we have. We're not getting rich or anything, but we are able to to put food on the table without having to dip into savings or anything. And better than that, the unexpected thing about playing these shows online is that we've met so many people that we never would have met any other way. And you know what the truth is about playing ragtime guitar is that, you know, in San Francisco, there might be 3 people who really want to, or okay, maybe 13 people or 30 people or whatever. I don't know the real number, but worldwide, there might be, you know, a few hundred people or more who are interested in that stuff. And I think the good thing that happened was that when we started playing these shows through word of mouth or whatever, we somehow cultivated a really nice, interested group of people. And it would be like showing up at a gig where people weren't on laptops trying to ignore the music, but they actually were there to hear you. And so that's really been crazy. I mean, we somehow have been able to get some really genuinely nice and interested people, you know, listening to us. And I guess that you're right. Without the COVID thing, that never would have happened. And so it's 2 things. We're able to make some money, and we're really thrilled about that, because the whole reason we started this in the first place was just out of sheer panic, I think. You know, when all the gigs dried up and all the bars and restaurants closed, I just had no idea what I was going to do. And San Francisco is a really expensive city.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, it's scary. I really don't know how a lot of musicians are doing. I try to keep in touch with my friends out here to play music. I guess it's like everybody's doing differently. And within about 5 minutes of this panic, I think I just told Meredith, we have to try doing something like live streaming. Or so I went on Facebook. I didn't even know how to do it, but there's a button you can press that says go live. And so the first thing I did was I just sat down in the living room, played guitar for 10 or 15 minutes, and I was really surprised that people were watching, you know. And and I didn't even have a Venmo or a PayPal thing up. I just was sort of testing the waters. And then I asked people if they thought that was a mistake, that, you know, here I am, I'm friends with these people on Facebook 1 minute, and the next minute I didn't want people to think I was begging for money. I didn't, you know, it's sort of an iffy ground to be on, I thought. But people were really nice, and I realized that maybe people wanted to be entertained when they're sitting at home sheltered in place like we were. And I found myself watching other people and enjoying, you know, listening to other musicians who I was friends with on Facebook, but maybe they lived a long way from here and I never got to hear them play. I don't know. It just seemed like it was a really accepting group of people, and we just very quickly decided that's what we needed to try doing. And Meredith is really good with computers. She knew how to set up camera, you know, the camera on her cell phone at the right angle. And we just decided to treat it like a gig and see what happened. So at first we didn't expect so many nice people. That's what made us keep going, was just that people were very positive and they were actually listening. You know, we were getting really sweet messages from people. And I guess as long as people continue to listen and we're making a little bit of money doing it and the shelter in place order is on, it just seemed like a good thing to do. And it still does. So.
Yeah. I mean, the technical, how you put it together, have you changed the microphones or everything? Or are you still just going through that phone?
Well, we're changing a few things around. It's pretty low tech, I think, but we're still using the same phone, but without the cracked screen now. And, yeah, I think it's pretty much the same as it has been. But we're getting a little tighter, I think, playing, because the cool thing is, you know, we'll do this thing at 8 o'clock at night, and during the day I'll sit and try to think of what I want to play. And so there are pieces that I just never really thought about playing, so that's too difficult or whatever. But now I've been sitting down and really trying to learn things that I always wanted to learn how to play. And so it's great. You know, I've been able to push myself a lot now that there's some more interest in that kind of music in our lives.
Yeah. And I feel like I've seen Meredith kind of just go on in the middle of the day too. Is that correct?
No, I don't think so. I've gone on in the middle of the day playing solo.
Okay.
8 or 9 times. I don't think she does that. Maybe she does, but I don't think so.
Okay. How did all this start for you? I've known you for 25 years, like we're talking about, but I don't know your life pre-Crumb soundtrack. Where did you grow up, and how did you find this music?
Well, I grew up in Maine, and I got into music in the first place, I think, initially through that TV show Hee Haw that was on in the 70s. But then I just started getting really, really interested in 78 records. And in the 70s, you could find those. Like, when I was a kid, you could find 78s everywhere. And when I was a kid, people would give me 78s a lot. So I wound up just listening to anything that would spin fast. You know, that was my initial thing. I listened to opera records, and I listened to whatever you could find in Maine, which was not a lot of blues, yeah, unfortunately, but you'd get a lot of country. And and my father was teaching. He taught European history at a local college, and so he had access to a library, and he'd bring home LPs of, you know, blues LPs and stuff that he was interested in hearing. So I was lucky. I got exposed to all kinds of music. And I was concurrently learning how to play the guitar, but I was just so young, you know, I was so young when I started playing, I guess, that I don't know, I don't want to say it came easily for me, but I was too young and dumb to really question things too much. You know, I just tried to play every day, or I played every day. And, you know, I love ragtime, so I tried to figure out how to play some of that on the guitar, but pretty much if I like a song, I don't really care what the style is that much. I like to play rockabilly. I like to play blues a lot. I like to play 20s and 30s standards a lot. And, you know, ragtime for me is just part of it. When the Crumb soundtrack came out, that was Terry's film, and he wanted specific things. You know, he wanted primarily ragtime, so that's what he got. And so I think if I am known for anything, I guess it might be that soundtrack. But if you come to one of my gigs, it's like we play 3 or 4 rags, but you can't just play ragtime and nothing else at gigs or people leave. So, I don't know if answers your question.
But you bypassed the whole teenager into rock and roll stage that most people hit.
No. Okay. When I was a teenager, I played in rock bands, but they were like garage bands. But the bands we were playing, and we really were into stuff like Elmore James, you know. And sure. I don't know if it was so much rock, as my brother is a really good rock guitar player, and so I heard tons of rock. He was really into the Ramones and stuff like that growing up, and I heard lots of that kind of stuff too. I was a typical kid. You know, we played loud music in the garage, and but when I turned 18 or so, or 19, I didn't really want to go to college, and I wanted to get busy playing guitar and try to make my living doing it. And when I wound up coming to San Francisco to see if that was possible. I wound up busking a lot, every day. And I think busking, probably taught me a lot about how to play the guitar, how to not stop in the middle of a song and just like keep going ahead. And it also gives you lots of time when you're busking to work things out, stare at the fretboard a lot. I guess I'm kind of a slow learner too. Like every 5 or 6 years, I'll have some epiphany. I realize, oh, I can do this on the guitar or that, but it's just taken a lot of time playing. So
did you have a particular spot that was your busking spot?
Yeah, there was Powell and Market where the cable cars turn around.
Sure.
There was Castro and 18th, Haight and Ashbury. I guess those were my three spots. And I did that for about maybe almost 15 years. And it was really, really hard. And one day I was busking on the street and these kids pelted me with filled soda cans while I was playing. You know, it was like one of these stupid things. But I realized that day, like, the playing on the street, you reach a point of diminishing returns. You know, you learn and learn and learn, and you meet really sweet people, and you meet weird people, and you meet all walks of life, which is great. You meet people on the street that would never be in a nightclub, or may never see you in a restaurant. So you meet, you know, I made connections actually without really intending to, I guess. But, you know, my whole family, nobody was in the so-called music business. So I still don't really understand the music business. And, I don't know. My whole goal is to just try to get through life playing guitar as much as possible without having to get a day job, just trying to make enough to pay rent and bills and save a little something if possible.
Sure.
So, you know.
Is the busking how Terry Zwigoff found you for the Crumb movie?
Yeah, I guess it was. That was on 24th Street. And, yeah, Terry was really nice. You know, He took the time to introduce himself, and we got to be friends. And he introduced me to Tom Marion. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, another local, or used to be local, legend to you.
Yeah, well, he's a great musician. He's the best string player I know for 20s era stuff, and he plays all that Italian stuff. But the thing that I learned from him, I guess, was that, you know, the way he plays, he doesn't use any really fancy chords or anything. You know, he plays in this beautiful style that's an old time style now, where you know there are a lot of passing chords that are difficult, I guess, if you start to think about what they are in music theory, you know, in music theory terms, but they're like passing chords. He was playing pretty much up and down the neck using first position chords, you know, C's and G's and so forth, shapes. And I never saw anybody do that before. So I think he really influenced me a lot at that point. Just that's when I really decided that I was really comfortable playing in first position, and I wanted to be comfortable playing all the way up and down the neck. But I didn't want to lose the beauty of those chords, you know, those really simple chords. So I started trying to teach myself how to twist my fingers all around so I could play that, you know, a C shape up and down the neck. Then I started trying to really figure out how to play in flat keys and different keys so that I could play with different jazz bands and stuff. But anyhow, Terry and Tommy and those people, they really influenced me a lot that way, just to stick to my guns and try to get the sound out of my guitar I wanted to get, instead of what people were telling me I should try to do or something.
Sure. And the other big ragtime guitarist that people know about is Eric Schoenberg, also in the Bay Area. Did you guys ever cross paths?
Around.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he's great. He's had us play at his guitar shop a couple of times. I don't know if they're still doing that, or, well, there's probably not even open now. But
yeah,
Eric's a good guy. He's a good friend.
You have a and I think it's probably been commented upon almost every time you've done one of these 105 Facebook Live things. You have a rather unique guitar, as does Meredith. What is that guitar for folks who haven't seen it yet? And how does it differ from like an acoustic, you know, a vintage Martin or Gibson that everybody has seen?
Meredith's guitar, I think she's using on this broadcast is something made by a guy named John DeLop, who lives in Sacramento. And the guitar I'm using is one of those Fralini guitars that Todd Cambio makes. And Todd is a dear friend, an old friend of mine, and he's such a great guitar builder. I don't think it really differs structurally from a Martin or a Gibson that much. Maybe the bracing or something, you'd have to ask him. But it's such a pleasure to play that guitar, you know, after years of having K's and harmonies and things that you kind of have to fight a little bit, or the action's just a little too high or something. Todd gave me that guitar. He and I were roommates in San Francisco a long time ago, and then he moved back to Wisconsin and he started building guitars for a living, and he called me out of the blue and told me he was making me a guitar and he wouldn't take no for an answer. I mean, that's so crazy nice of him. I still can't believe he did that, but he did it, and so I have this great guitar. And that's what it is, but it's, you know, it's a 6-string steel string guitar.
What was he doing in San Francisco? I didn't even know that chapter of his life. Do you guys just find each other through music?
He needed a room and he came over just to apply for a room. And he told me he liked old music. And I asked him who he listened to. And he said, I know, but you ever would have heard of Blind Lemon Jefferson is my favorite guitar player. So we wound up listening to Blind Lemon Jefferson records, and he was such a great roommate. It was great. So he was working as a carpenter.
That's amazing.
But you could tell, yeah, he can build anything. He's a woodworker, and I think he's probably a master builder. I don't know anything about building, but I think he's the kind of guy, he's really smart. And if he wanted to build whatever, I think he could do it somehow. And I remember going to guitar stores with him out here, and he'd look at guitars and tell me things about them, like, oh, this guitar would have been so much better if this had been done, or he knew a lot. He already in his head knew what he wanted to do, you know. And then, you know, thankfully for the world, he decided to become a luthier, and I have a feeling his guitars are all over the world. I think people use them. I mean, he's an acknowledged great guitar builder, and he ought to be. The other guitar I've been using is also a Fralini. It's a 12-string guitar he made. And that thing is so light that sometimes if it's in a case, you think there's no guitar in the case. You know, it's like light as a feather. So crazy. I don't know how he did that. And it's just got this beautiful sound. All his guitars just are so great. But that's what I'm playing anyhow.
Got it. And what's your setup? Are you using finger picks? I don't even know.
Flat pick and fingers.
Okay.
Sometimes I finger pick. Sometimes I use a pick and a finger.
I have to imagine one of the byproducts of you broadcasting these every night is that some people are probably hitting you up asking you if you teach. Do you teach?
I haven't got too many people hitting me up asking me if I can teach. Actually, and I do teach, but I usually tell people that I don't really teach enough to have, formal lesson plans and stuff. So I usually tell people what I'm pretty good at, or what I feel confident about, is left hand technique. I feel fairly confident that I can help people if they have questions and they're coming to me in the first place, where, you know, I can help with left hand stuff, I think. And that's usually how I try to work it, is rather than have a weekly lesson with somebody, I'll suggest that maybe once every couple of months we have an hour lesson come loaded with questions, or just, you know, play for me and I'll try to, I'll say what I can, you know, without trying to sound like a know-it-all or anything at the same time. But yeah, I give lessons, but not enough to make a living doing it. I think right now I have one student, and that's about what I have. Yeah. If I ever am teaching, I have about one student at a time.
Okay. One in, one out.
Yeah.
Where do you see this going, this online stuff? Are you just going to keep going until stay at home is lifted, or do you have any idea?
I'm going to keep doing it, because I really enjoy it. It's giving us some structure. You know, everybody who's stuck at home, you need something to do, you know, some structure. It's been really good for us to wake up and say, okay, what are we going to play tonight? Or is there some song we really enjoy that lately we've been surprising each other? Because what we do is each pick four or five songs, and sometimes we'll decide during the day, this is what we're going to do. But sometime we'll just spring it on each other. Sometime I don't know the song Meredith is playing, and she doesn't know the song I'm playing, but she's got a really good ear, so that's okay. Definitely going to keep doing it though, because I would be playing guitar anyway. And I think people are, I mean, I know that the same people are tuning in night after night, so I wouldn't stop unless people told us, please stop or something. if I ever felt like we were just bothering people, I'd stop. But I guess if we were bothering people, they could always just go to another Facebook page. So
yeah, I think they would just unlike you. They wouldn't actually talk
exactly,
to you about
it. That, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it has been such a beautiful thing, especially with all the noise and just all the bad news on Facebook, just to, even when I don't remember that it's 8 o'clock, just to see it on my feed, and then I get sucked in like others from around the world have. So I can't thank you enough. It's been amazing.
That's so nice of you. I really appreciate the thank you.
So
we love to do it. Yeah, we really do. And there are some other people around doing these things that I think are doing okay with it. That you know, it's, as I said, it's great to see other people doing it as well, and hearing music from all over the place. It's very cool.
Yeah, well, we're hopefully with this podcast turning some people onto what you're doing. Why don't you tell me one or two artists that you've been admiring from afar via the Facebook or the internet?
Well, one person I think is great. He doesn't live that far from here, but I've really enjoyed watching Mitch Polzak's stuff. You checked him out?
No, I don't even know who that is.
He lives in Anacostia County, I think, and he plays country music mostly, and he's very, very talented singer and guitar player and banjo player, and he did the same thing that I think he panicked a little bit or something, or maybe not. I don't want to say that because I don't know. He probably didn't panic about not having gigs, but he was gigging every night, you know, and and that dried up. So he started going on Facebook Live, and he puts on a really good show. It's worth catching. You know, he's a great musician and a great singer. And I think he's cultivated a pretty big audience too. I watched him one night where it was all Waylon Jennings songs, you know, and he really puts his heart into it. He loves that stuff. I've really been enjoying him a lot. And then I guess a lot of it is just random. I saw these two guys from Mexico playing guitar. I don't even know who they were, but they were great. And I never saw them again. It was just one time. But, it, you know, there's so many great musicians in the world. There's so many people who, maybe some of these people, they were just playing in whatever place they live, just like I'm playing in San Francisco. Our paths may never have crossed, but yeah, it's really delightful to get to hear people. I heard some people from Italy playing like mandolin and guitar. They sounded like an old record. They were really great, but I couldn't tell you their names either, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, besides all these Facebook performances, is the Crumb soundtrack the only way to really hear you recorded in a proper studio?
Well, that Crumb soundtrack wasn't recorded in a proper studio, unfortunately. It was, and also, I don't think it's an accurate representation of my playing anymore. Like, I listened to it, that was 25 years ago,
yeah.
I don't think I was playing that well compared to now. I hope that I get a little bit better every year. But that I don't know. There's a CD that came out about 15 years ago on Origin Jazz Library, but I don't know if that's representative of my current playing. I think I'm going to have to put out a new CD. I've put out about 15 recordings over the years on my own, but those have been the kind of thing where, you know, you'd press 500 and they'd sell out, and I haven't really been thinking much about making a new CD because I don't know that many people with CD players, and I wonder if it would be easy to sell them out or not. But I want to record something new soon. Right now, I guess what I'd say is the Origin Jazz Library thing is still in print, and I think you can get that online. It's called The Past Is Yet to Come.
Oh, yeah, I remember that record. I have that.
Okay.
And what are you currently obsessing over? What music are you really diving into? And maybe you're not emulating. I'm just kind of curious what's on your stereo.
Well, I collect old 78s, and so because there's only one song on each side, you know, it's like I guess the way I obsess about a song is I just listen to the same 78 20 times or whatever, and it becomes a favorite, and then I put it away. I don't know, like I got a 78 couple of months ago by Guitar Slim, but not the Guitar Slim from the 50s, this guy who made like one record, and I think Robert Nighthawk is playing with him on it. So that was great. I don't know. I listen to everybody. I listen to so much music. I can't say that there's one thing right now that I'm really obsessing with, but I listen to a lot of vocalists from the turn of the century all the time, like Billy Murray. I'm always interested in hearing people like that. I think I learned the most about music from either old piano rolls or from turn of the century vocalists like Billy Murray and Dan W. Quinn and guys like that. I don't know why, but that really grabs me, that stuff.
All right. Well, you've at least sent me down a few tangents that I'm going to pursue tonight. So,
what are you listening to right now?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. I'm all over the map. You know, it's
yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought of somebody though. Actually, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, go for it.
You know who I was listening to a couple of weeks ago that I really couldn't believe I hadn't heard more of before? Diego Del Gastor. You ever hear that guy?
I don't know who that is, no.
He's the flamenco guitarist who died maybe about 40 years ago now. Go on YouTube and look up Diego Del Gastor. That guy will trip you out. Like, every note sings, and he plays in this very old-style flamenco. You know, he's not playing anything fancy. It's just very soulful, beautiful guitar playing, the likes of which I don't think I've run into that often. He's incredible. I wish there were more things by him. I think he only made two records in his life, and they're hard to find, but there are some YouTube clips of him playing at a party or something and accompanying a singer. That guy's amazing, amazing guitar player.
Great. All right. Something else to check out.
Yeah. I'd recommend him.
Yeah. Well, Craig, thank you so much. Everybody out there should be tuning in. Give it a try. It's 8 p.m. Pacific time on your... It's either on both your Facebook and Meredith's, right?
No, it's not on my Facebook page. You can get it by going to Meredith Axelrod on Facebook, and she's also using Instagram. So I think if you go to Meredith Axelrod on Instagram also at 8 p.m., same time, 8 p.m. every night, Pacific Standard Time. And we really do appreciate you taking an interest in that. I thank you very much.
Oh, there haven't been many There hasn't been much lemonade made out of all these lemons lately, but yours is one. So thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you for calling, really.
And one of these days, when the dust clears and it's safe to send a photographer over to you and a writer, we'll get the full Fretboard Journal treatment, I promise.
All right.
Thanks
Sounds
so much.
Sounds good. But in the meantime, stay safe where you are, Jason.
All right. You
it's
too,
nice
man.
Nice to hear your voice again.
Yeah, you too.